It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is number 391. My name is Joey. That's Len. Len, did you see Donald in the, not the Oval, but whatever that media room is that he's often using with the fancy chairs, no couches, no desks, though, talking about how he is all in on Canada being the 51st state yet again today. Did you catch that? That was about 4 or 5 hours ago.
Did he say he's going to let us keep the national anthem?
He did. Yeah, he likes the anthem, the O Canada. He said we can keep that. I do like that he says we're going to be the best state. You know, that's, I guess, a plus for us. I don't know how Texas or California feels about that, but yeah, interesting.
So how many people are going to be joining? Was it 40 million people? Voters, yeah. Probably about like, I don't know, 30 million-ish voters? Yeah, I'm just throwing out numbers. I have no idea. And if you're going to say like it's a lot of them are left-leaning compared to the United States, so they, you know, would they allow that many?
How many
Democrat voters are coming in?
Well, how many delegates would our state get? I don't know. I don't think we're going to get 30, 40 delegates. Probably get, you know, two or something. Or maybe we'll be the Puerto Rico North, no representation.
Isn't it based on population?
Yeah, it is. It is based on population in some places, but I think there's other gerrymandering that goes on to maximize the number of seats in certain, you know, red or blue areas. I'm not an expert in American political, I guess you'd call this political science, but yeah, it's interesting to think about us being the 51st state. I think honestly, Len, I said this on another podcast I appeared on yesterday. This is out of left field for this show, but you know, when I keep on hearing that we're supposed to have this like nationalistic stripe, I want to ask people like, which, for example, with grocery stores, right? When I hear from like my in-laws or other people, you need to buy Canadian, go to Canadian stores. Am I going to the Canadian stores that 2 months ago you told me were price gouging me? And am I buying the products that are being, you know, shipped and manufactured by low wage immigrants as opposed to Canadians who can't find work? And these stores I'm going to pick up these products, are these the ones that wouldn't let me in unless I had two or three vaccines a few years back? Like, are these the stores you're talking about, or are there other stores in the room with us right now?
A lot of people have to look in the mirror. Where's been this talk for the past 40, 50 years?
Yeah.
When there's even longer than that, where there's been a steady decline of domestic stores here because people are shopping. They're voting with their pocketbook. They look for something that's cheaper. And I'm the same way. I'm looking at myself. I'm not going to say that I'm better than anybody else. I look for the most valued product out there. And if it's from the United States or anywhere else, I don't really care. I just tend to buy whatever's best value.
Whatever makes more sense for your family, right? Like, you're doing the things that are right for your family. Anyway, we're like out of pocket up for this show, but seeing the comments and hearing people talk about this, you know, nationalistic attitude we're supposed to have, I just am completely lost. And to be honest with you, Len, I'm low on patience for those people at this point. Quite low on patience, I will say.
Screw them, Joey. Screw them.
How's Easter's going to be interesting? I don't know how it's going to be for you, but I think it's going to be interesting for me. Let's get to it. This is number 391. Like I said, last week's quote of the week, "We are all born mad. Some remain so." That was by Samuel Beckett. No one got it. That's a familiar name to me, but I don't know who that person is. This week's quote, "You can't create wealth by sharing poverty. There's no way you can do that miracle. Not even by the magicians of communism." If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. That's a great quote. Yeah. No searching, Googling, all that stuff. You guys know the rules. Do not pervert the process. And if you win, you'll get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Len, where do you want to start today? We have a couple of good stories.
Power school.
Yeah. You want to start there? Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's kind of piggybacking off a previous. I think we talked about in the past where the Toronto District School Board had their information potentially hacked. Well, did hack it, and it was taking access of information for 40 years. But anyways, this PowerSchool, this is a leading student information system. It's a software as a service used by schools and districts to manage student data, tracking attendance, and providing platform for parents and students to access grade schedules and other important information. This is a honeypot.
Are you familiar with this? Like, your daughter does not go to a Toronto District School Board school, but is this like something that gets used widely? This kind of software? I've never heard of this before, so I don't know.
Nor have I. But this, it's not like it's a cheap thing, because this used to be a publicly traded company, PowerSchool, until it was purchased this past year in 2024 by Bain Capital, $5.6 billion. So very, very large. Like, I don't know if they use it over here in my neck of the woods. I would assume so, just given how much impact that they have in terms of reaching out to new school boards and all these school boards, be United States, overseas, Canada. Like, it's incredible how many people use this. But either way, they've been providing software to more than 18,000 schools and 60 million students across North America, 60 million. And they've been subjected to an attack. Somebody breached their system. It only happened a couple of months ago in January 2025. Funny enough, this happened after the purchase by Bain Capital. So maybe Bain Capital, either somebody doesn't like them, or maybe they altered the software in a way that's going to be easier for somebody to get access to it. It only took a single compromised credential to that was needed to steal all this information. So it wasn't like it was a great deal of effort required. And they started to inform the people that have been impacted by this. What are they going to give them? I don't think it's going to be the standard one-year credit monitoring service. This is something beyond that, in my opinion. But there is really no information yet as to how many people are subjected to this attack. But keep in mind, I did mention at the beginning that the Toronto District School Board had around 240,000 students earlier this year impacted. So that could be, it's all part and parcel of this. And they say that sensitive personal information was taken on students and teachers, including students' grades, attendance, and demographics. The latter would be interesting to see, especially in the 416 region. Either way, what PowerSchool did, they paid a ransom to the attackers who breached the system. What this does, it just makes the whole thing even more lucrative, because now it's showing you that these guys are willing to pay up if there is some sort of breach. And this is going to make it all the more of an opportunity for people to take advantage of them and try to get more information. This is an absolute mess. Maybe this is going to be a calling card for people to start doing homeschooling, where you're not going to be subjected to having your kid and their information added to this database. I don't know. It's pretty crappy if you ask me.
Couple other things I want to note here. The breach happened in December of 24. They started notifying people a month later and still have not answered a bunch of questions. I want to read an excerpt from the article that you'll find interesting. While PowerSchool has been open about some aspects of the breach, for example, PowerSchool told TechCrunch that the breached PowerSource portal did not support multi-factor authentication at the time of the incident. Several important questions remain unanswered months on. Is it possible then that they remain unanswered because the company that these guys contracted and engaged to find the issues isn't having that great a quarter/year themselves? You may remember these guys, CrowdStrike, heard of them? Does that name ring a bell? I don't know that any company these days is able to really pin down what happened, when it happened, how it happened, and do it in a timely manner so that communities like this can be protected. I mean, you're talking about sensitive data from kids, although they say that sensitive data was not necessarily accessed, blah, blah, blah. You know, we've heard that before. This is what we call on Access of Easy, the first of many. We'll hear more about this over the coming weeks and months, I'm sure, as more information is leaked and more people are upset about the outcome. It's incredible that in the year of our Lord 2024, I suppose, when the breach happened, they didn't have any MFA available. MFA is like the baseline for user security. There's nothing else that you should expect platform to platform in terms of like high grade, high level, easy to use security besides MFA. And they didn't have it. This is what you get. You know, you earn this one.
Joey, let's move on. We'll talk about Garantix. You heard about this exchange before?
I have not.
Yeah, nor have I. I mean, there's not to say that we should have heard about it, but it seems like this has been under the crosshairs for authorities such as the DOJ and others. They've joined forces and they worked together to take down Garantix. And for those who aren't aware, Garantix is an exchange, and they claim that they are or were allegedly facilitating money laundering by moving around money for traditional criminal organizations. And they were doing so in a way to evade sanctions. And this isn't something that has been going on just for a few months. It's been going on since, allegedly, since April 2019. And they say that $96 billion worth of digital assets have been moved around through this exchange. And it took also a couple of guys with it. I'm not even going to pronounce their names. I'm going to butcher it like crazy. But either way, a couple of guys that were associated with it.
Does that mean we're not going to be writing the names?
Well, not their given names. This is just, I'm not going to be rating either way. Guarantex, we could rate that. I don't really particularly care about rating
bad.
It.
It's bad.
They say that they received hundreds of millions of dollars in criminal proceeds that was used to facilitate crimes. So they're doing stuff like ransomware, hacking, drug trafficking, terrorism. And they're saying that what they're doing here is impacting people around the world, including U.S. individuals. So that's why the DOJ got involved. And this is going to be more prevalent moving forward, the using of these digital assets, I'm trying to say, for money laundering and even trying to evade sanctions. Look what happened with North Korea when they stole all that ETH from Bybit, I think what's the name of the exchange. And now that Bitcoin is becoming more prevalent too, Donald Trump has talked about the strategic Bitcoin reserve and stable coins at that too. A lot of people are using that. But I think it really just highlights that this is just another way to get around existing sanctions. But still, it's going to be a way, you know, they could potentially still get caught through these exchanges or even centralized stable coins. Like, I'm not sure if you heard a story not too long ago, US dollar Tether, USDT. A lot of that was essentially made inoperable because they were being used in Russia. And so USDT decided, you know what, with a stroke of a pen, decided to say that your USDT is now worthless. So yeah, there's going to be now a lot of work that's going to be done between companies like Tether, USDC, and the authorities out there. So we'll see a lot more stories like this moving forward. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I think an underrated part of the Trump administration's embrace of crypto and Bitcoin is that in the Biden administration, and even in the probably late, early Trump administration, there was an effort, I don't want to say underground, but certainly behind the scenes, unofficial, let's call it, effort to choke out some of these crypto slash Bitcoin exchanges and businesses, banks, et cetera, et cetera. And what you get, Len, is exactly this. You drive business overseas, and that business, you know, much like the US dollar, wants to finance crime at some percentage, right? If it's 5% of all US dollars going to crime, it's 5% of all crypto going to crime, whatever that number is. When that stuff is onshore and you're operating in regulated, you know, sort of cages on US territory, the companies are domiciled in the US, et cetera, it's easier to track that stuff down. When you send it overseas, you increase the likelihood that criminals will find those exchanges like Guarantrex or Guarantex, and they'll use those exchanges to do the, you know, to carry out the illegal activities on these networks and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that sort of the unwritten and unheralded bit of this recent positive feedback and positive, you know, the positive attitude about crypto from the Trump admin is about bringing stuff back on shore to combat exactly this. You know, I think we'll see a lot more stories. I wouldn't be surprised if before the end of 4 years, we see a major American story, as opposed to like, you know, a Russian exchange or another foreign exchange being the hub of, activities of that nature. It's interesting, right? People get really excited about the Trump administration and their support of Bitcoin and crypto, but there's always a second reason. And I think this is one that people are not discussing that probably should get a little more attention.
Well, let's keep on this digital asset thing. The people are very excited about this Trump coin. Let's be honest. What a joke this turned out to be. But for people that are unaware, Trump released this Trump coin not too long ago. There was a lot of hoopla from it, and people were trading it. And eventually, it was a rug pull from this because there's no value here. There's just no fundamentals that somebody would say, yeah, I'm going to store my money here for a very long time. It's just... It's really just a pump and dump. But either way, there's a scam out there that people were being subjected to an offer of 2,000 free Trump coins. And instead of, you know, doing what they should have done, they were delivered the ConnectWise rat with, it was very, very fast. This stuff ended up on a computer. But how it was done, because they were impersonating Binance.
And they went out there and they were showing that they were impersonating Binance and saying, look, if you do these things, you'll be able to get 2,000 of these Trump coins. And people said, yeah, I'm going to get this. Why? And I know the meme
You wouldn't do this? You wouldn't jump at this opportunity for 2,000 Trump
coins? Just download this file, open it up, and yeah, if it asks for permissions, give it, and the coins will end up in your wallet, no questions asked. The meme coin market, it's full of people that are just trying to hit a home run. I don't think a lot of them care about security. I'm pretty sure a lot of them don't care about the coin themselves. They're just there to try to enrich themselves, and they're doing so at the expense of others. Somebody's going to have to make them rich. But unfortunately, the thing is, there's so many people out there that are losing money, and there's so much garbage going on out there. So why people are looking at this and say, yeah, the Trump coin, 2,000 free Trump coins is great, I have no idea, but the scam exists. If somebody's going to offer you some free coins just by downloading and installing something, even though it looks like it's coming from something like Coinbase or Binance or another big exchange, do yourself a favor and just say, no, it's not worth it, and it's all fake.
Totally agree. This is akin to the Nigerian Prince scam, right? Where the email itself seems completely insane if you read it, but the whole point is that if someone in your life can be convinced to read the email, they're a perfect mark for something like this. And if someone in your life cares about the Trump coin or wants the Trump coin, they're the perfect mark for something like this. It's a great scam. I commend the executors of this program here. Len, the thing I can't figure out is the Trump coin people, they realize the coin is down like 90%, is it not? So why do they still want it so badly? Why not just put your money somewhere else? Go for another scam. There must be better scams out there than this, right? Certainly XRP scams are still prevalent, are they not? Trump scams seem like they're so passe at this point.
How many? I don't know the number, but somebody posted it some time ago. I think it was Brian Armstrong. There's an incredible amount of meme coins that are being created every day.
Yeah.
So in terms of like there's another scam behind around the corner, yeah, you just blink and there's another one in front of you.
Can you imagine if we, I remember when we got into Bitcoin in 2017, you and me were both altcoining, to keep it PG at the time, trying to make a little extra cash. And what was the rubric we used to look for? Does it have a logo and does it have a subreddit? And if it does, $50. Everything gets $50. See what happens. Now there's a million of these things.
Does it have a Telegram channel and does it have a website?
Yeah, yes, Discord. Yeah, okay. Is there a community or whatever? Unbelievable, right? It's crazy. I can't imagine being into this stuff now.
The dev team. Yeah, it doesn't have who's on it. Who cares?
Oh man.
So yeah, there was a cyber attack that impacted X this past week. They've had a pretty bad week, and it was down for many hours on March 10th. And I think it even spilled over to March 11th, if I recall correctly.
When we recorded our show on Monday night, you may have noticed, I don't know if you ever looked at the viewer numbers, but they were down a few hundred because I think the streams on X, we just weren't going through. A few people messaged me and told me that. So interesting. It was a long, the stretch was quite long for that outage.
Yeah. Elon's made a lot of enemies, and we'll be talking about that in next story too. But he's saying that, quote, a lot of resources, unquote, could be linked to a, quote, coordinated group and or a country, end quote. So he suspects that there's some very powerful individuals or even entities that have access to a great deal of resources that could go out and just hammer X with a denial of service attack. Dark Storm team, they came out and claimed responsibility for this. I don't know if there's any truth to this or they're just trying to up their reputation by saying, yeah, they've done this. But more than anything, I like to point out that an alternative exists, and it's Nostr. And Nostr, because it's decentralized and relies on relays that people run themselves, it's not subjected to these DDoS attacks because Twitter is a centralized service. And if you go off for those central servers, that's it. It's gone. So like Nostr just works. So it's too bad for X, but I think this is highlighting that there's better alternatives out there. Yeah, it may not be as polished and it may be more difficult to use, but isn't Bitcoin kind of the same thing? I don't want to make this a Bitcoin story, but we just see that there's something better, and it may be a little harder to use, but ultimately it's better for us in the end. So I think more than anything, we should look for something better than X, and there's one that does exist.
Agreed. I'd also note that Elon famously is trying to turn X into a payments platform as well, right? So if you start putting all your eggs in one basket, whether it's all your social media eggs or all your payment eggs, you do subject yourself to problems like this. You know, you're sort of at the mercy of whichever hacker group decides they don't like Tesla and Elon that week. And to your point, Noster is a great way to continue the social media side of that. And as we talk about often, the best way to continue the finance and spending slash payments slash, you know, store of value network side of that is Bitcoin. You can say what you like about either of those platforms, but the fact of the matter is there is no way that either of those could be subjected to an attack like this. And as we say every week on the show, the resources and means and methods, to be frank, of these attacks continues to improve and become more complicated. So I can't imagine there's going to be less of these going forward. Certainly not if Elon remains in the spotlight. And, you know, as we've discussed many times, cuts off stuff like USAID and these other, you know, gravy trains that the federal government's really been just sprinkling sugar on for the last 30, 40 years. He's not going to become a smaller target. So you want to have some eggs in a different basket. Noster's a good one. Bitcoin, obviously, and I'm sure there's others we're missing.
Mm-hmm. And the last story, which is another Elon story, it discusses something called Media Matters for America, MMFA. Have you heard of them before?
Media Matters, yeah. It's like, you know, one of these quote unquote. It's like it's a censorship, you know, sort of monolith, fake. We're supporting quality content, blah, 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 blah. You'll remember that we did a story on this months ago on this show where Elon and Twitter users were complaining that, not Elon, but people were complaining about certain brands having their advertisements placed next to like Nazi tweets or like swastikas or racial stuff. And I pointed out at that time, you'd have to go back in the catalog. I don't know what episode that was, but if you go back in the catalog, I did point out that the only way that could have been done was through algorithmic cherry picking and, you know, nerfing of what the algorithm would normally give you till you finally get an Apple ad next to a, you know, softcore porn or hardcore porn, geez, on Twitter these days, or something else that's unsavory to say the least. And then you take that screenshot, send it to the advertiser, and they're done. They have to make a statement because that was the world we were living in. But I think that world has passed. And so that's what makes the story even a little more interesting is that this is still going on, it seems like, for Elon at least.
Yeah. And he's made a lot of enemies, as I mentioned, in this Media Matter. You heard it, somebody named David Brock, because he's the guy apparently that founded this whole Media Matters for America.
We definitely talked about him before, but I am not familiar enough to know his, you know, sort of history, background, and slant. Although the story does sort of give it away. Obviously, you kind of know he's a left-leaning activist, speech activist, whatever you say. Call that whatever you like. He's a censorship enthusiast.
Well, you mentioned about how the major brands, the posts, they were touting Hitler or Nazi party in a way that X claims that its algorithm was organically wouldn't allow. So like it just, you touch on that point, and all this goes back to now there's a lawsuit because X is now suing MMFA, those MFs, in Texas, Dublin, and Singapore. And they're saying that MMFA is saying this is wrong because the terms of services says that all lawsuits that start from X have to be done in the San Francisco County. So it seems funny that X, they have their own terms that saying that they should be dealing with court cases in San Francisco County, but they're initiating court cases outside of that jurisdictions. So because of that, they're being sued. So I don't know. Seems funny. It's just
another example of, you know, the butthurt that's becoming more and more prevalent as Elon's influence grows. And as people who care about free speech emerge from, you know, a 10-year hibernation, basically at this point, right? 2016, maybe before that, even during the Trump one campaign, it was hard to speak up about some of the stuff that you knew to be true, whether it was the Very Fine People hoax or, you know, any number of other just completely misrepresented major events in media, by media, and I would argue for the sitting government. Now, don't forget too, as part of the Twitter files and part of the releases since Trump 2 came into power, there was a release about how the government did point its resources through, you know, secondary and tertiary lettered agencies and other quote unquote NGOs. There are only GOs, as we know. You know, pointing their resources to advertisers trying to choke out Twitter on the advertising side. Like this is not, it's not a sort of controversial thing to say this anymore. This is a proven fact. And to see Elon suing these guys, good. Elon has unlimited resources in a way that not many enemies of the state, formerly enemies of the state, do. And I hope that he takes these people to task, all of them. They all deserve to get some kind of comeuppance from this because they've done a disservice not only to the electorate, but to the freedom of speech ethos that really is the foundation of the United States. That's taken a hit over the last few years. And as that ethos has weakened in the U.S., what else has happened, Len? You've seen it weaken other places too, where it's not as deeply rooted. It's not a mystery, these things. These things are all related. And it's good to see someone trying to hold other people accountable, even if it's Elon.
Well, Elon's net worth has taken a huge pounding in the past 4 months or so.
Yeah.
Tesla, it's down, what is it, like 50% since its all-time high?
Oh, minimum. Yeah. It's having a bad... Listen, people hate that guy. You can convince me of anything in terms of coordinated attacks against Elon, whether it's the Tesla stock price, advertising on Twitter, you name it. I'd believe it. You know, these crazies knocking out glass windows and vandalizing cars at dealerships. Completely insane stuff. There's a lot of crazies out there who will execute on almost any, you know, broad sweeping quote unquote strategy to scare people like Elon Musk. But this guy, you know, to his credit, he's doing a lot of good work. You may agree or disagree with the means, but you can't argue with the outcomes. I don't think no sound or sane person could argue with the outcomes here.
What's ironic too is that he's the ultimate leech.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Getting a lot of subsidies, right? He's taking a lot of subsidies from a lot of countries on the Tesla side. Yeah. We'll see if that continues. I doubt that it will, but you know, he doesn't care. One more point I want to make before we wrap up. People give guys like Elon, Sachs, a few others who are filthy rich, like Bessent and Lutnick. These guys are hedge fund guys, you know, money managers. They're not coming to government to enrich themselves. That like they can't make any more money in government than they could have made in the private sector, just influencing government. Yes, they did get a bit of a tax break. They have to divest from some investments when they take a post with the government, and those are not subjected to capital gains. I freely admit that. But the idea that you could not continue to make your hundreds of billions by just having a meeting with the guy who ends up taking the seat, as opposed to taking the seat yourself, is completely wrong. And it's an example of people being misinformed and I think fed bad information by the media about these individuals. Oh, these people are just enriching themselves. No, man. You know, Bessent and Lutnick and Musk and Trump, their net worth will decline over their time in government, while the Warrens, Obamas, Sanders, Schumers, etc., will see their net worth go up exponentially over their time in government. And those things are indisputable. They're recorded, they're written down, and you could even say they're conservatively estimated for those politicians as well. So I think people need to give their head a shake on that. It's an important time in America and in sort of the global West. And I would not rather have anyone else in some of those positions than the guys I see there now.
It's a good rant to end it on.
Yeah, too bad. I was going to say that for Monday, but I guess not. Come back next week, Thursday, Access of Easy. We'll be doing yet another episode on the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And my name is Joey. That's Len. Until next time, take care.
Take care.